Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
Hey everyone, this is Les Jackson of Detroit Bad Boys, and we gotta sit down and have a chat. This Sunday's podcast revolves around the 22 and 26 Detroit Pistons, who have now lost 8 straight games and altered the future of the franchise in the process. Jamie and I talk about hashtag Team Tank, the Pistons' life after SVG, and the Oscars, surprisingly enough. As always, we appreciate your continued support of the podcast. The best way to do that is to share, like, and leave comments. Please leave comments on the post on Detroit Bad Boys. It's the best way for us to build the podcast according to what the fans want. In order to do that, though, you have to follow DetroitBadBoys.com, which is the best place on the internet for Pistons news and analysis this season. With all that said, it's time to go to work. Hey everyone, welcome to the Detroit Bad Boys podcast. I am your host, Lazarus Jackson. I do not have my usual co-host, Ben Gulker, by my side today. He had to take care of his baby. Get well soon, baby Ben. But instead, we have Jamie Delaney. What's up, Jamie?
What's up, Laz? Hey everybody, happy to be talking about these really depressing Pistons. Let's do it.
So... just to top level view, the Pistons are now, we are recording this in the wake of the 121-104 loss to the Cavs on Sunday. The Pistons are now 22-26, ninth in the East, and they have lost 8 straight games. That is
wake being the optimal word in that sentence, because this team feels just that depressing at the moment.
Well, actually, tonight was like as well as you could reasonably expect them to play against the Cavs, but they still lost. So
I feel like that's like, I thought the same thing at first, and then I realized it's Stockholm syndrome, because there's no way I should be happy about Anthony Tolliver playing 39 minutes and being like our leading scorer. That's
one half of the coin. The other half of the coin is that Stanley Johnson had like his third good game in like the last like 8. So, which is more than we were having before. So I guess we'll take that, I suppose.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
So normally I have a whole bunch of stuff about, you know, where they rank offensively, where they rank defensively, who they've played this week. None of that matters. They lost all their games this week. It doesn't matter. But in doing so and losing all their games this week, they've opened up like some huge questions as to what the future of this franchise should be. So, Jamie, I guess the first question I want to pose to you is, should Stan Van Gundy step down as president of basketball operations?
Step down, I don't think he'd ever do. I think he should be fired.
Should is doing a lot of work in that sentence.
Yeah, it is. So step down as president of basketball operations. Basically pull like a buttonholzer.
Yeah, the Doc Rivers.
Well, Doc Rivers got stripped of it. Buttonholzer actually stepped down. That's the difference in the two.
Okay.
I think he should. But here's the thing is like, I think you're putting a Band-Aid on a bullet wound if you just take away the president of basketball operations. I think this core group of players, there's enough, to me at least, it feels like there's enough bad sentiment kind of building up that it's either got to be like he sticks around and like figures out a way to turn it around and keep this going, or we need a new regime. And I'm leaning towards the latter right now. So yeah, I would say he not only needs to be stepping down from president of basketball operations, he needs to be kind of fired from all of his Pistons duties.
See, I've heard a lot of that this week, like on Twitter and on DBB and on the Pistons subreddit and on the cesspool that is the Facebook comments that make up.
God, what is going on there?
Yeah, I have no idea what's
going on. If you're listening to this and you are active in the DBB Facebook comments, please reach out. And I just want to give you like a test, like an IQ test to see what's going on. Cause it's crazy. It's like the bizarro world of Pistons fandom. I can't understand it.
I got no idea what's going on Facebook, but Stan. So the issue is that the Pistons are losing a lot right now, but to me, like I see the long vision of like what Stan Van Gundy was trying to achieve with this roster and with this team. And I see no reason why it couldn't have worked. It just hasn't. It's like there's this Warren Ellis alternate universe comic book called Ruins, where you know how the Marvel universe, all the superheroes get their powers through like a series of weird experiments, or like you shoot people into space and they come back with superpowers. Well, this is like a deconstruction of that, where like you shoot people into space and they come back with superpowers and cancer. And so like the world is just like this really, really terrible place, like ruled by these like really evil, like sick people, because like there was no one to stop them. And it's like you can easily, like, because we know the story of how it worked out and like how you actually get superpowers and like you aren't like a serial killer and you aren't like using your powers for evil or anything, we see like how tragic it is that like everything is like so close to like falling away. That's how I feel about like the Stan Van Gundy regime. Like we're so close to like having everything work and just having everything go smoothly and being in the secondary tier of the Eastern Conference, and like two injuries and an extended stretch of games where they couldn't play well in crunch time due to an injury and due to coaching and due to some other stuff. Is just like that's the reason we're gonna abandon this long-term plan that like seemed really good. It's like, to me, it just doesn't seem like worthwhile to me, if that makes any sense.
No, that does. I totally see what you're saying, and I think it kind of goes back to what you were tweeting out earlier this week of like process over results, right? You can kind of see the process in play, but I think this long into his tenure, we can't keep trusting the process. I don't think his leash is that long enough where we have like a process in play. This has become a situation, and especially with him being the president of basketball operations at the same time, where his hands are kind of tied. Like it's got to be a win now, results now type of thing, because I just don't see how you can miss the playoffs and go into the last year of your contract, like hoping, like staying with the same core group of players that we have right now and turning this all around. It feels to me like we've seen this now for the past 3 years, and with, you know, minor upgrades or moves here and there, some good, some bad. And I feel like it's just not working. And I would rather us jump ship sooner than later.
So would you fire him to prevent him from like stripping down the future for parts to try and win now? Is that part of it?
Yeah. I think that's, if you're Tom Gores, that's gotta be part of it, because, you know, this guy's just not in a contract that would allow him to keep your franchise's future, like, best interest in mind, if that makes sense. I think you got to kind of step in sooner than later.
Yeah, no, that does make sense. I think that if you do fire Stan Van Gundy and you do decide to embrace the tank, which, you know, we talked about a little bit before the podcast, I'm not really team tank. I'm not a tanking person, but, and you're like halfway on the team tank, but
yeah, it's, here's my thing. You basically, if you're team tank, you have to be team fire SVG. Like there's no way you can, there's no middle ground with that decision. Like, you can't say SVG deserves to stay and be team tank. That just, that situation doesn't play out.
Well, I guess the issue, I could see like a scenario where he stays and they tank, but like, I don't think he would want to stick around for the tank. So like, I kind of see like, yeah, exactly. You'd have to fire him. But
yeah, you'd basically just be firing him in the summer instead of midway through the season.
Yeah. And like, I also see like he does only have like 1 year left on his deal. You kind of don't want that like lame duck year where everyone's kind of unsure about the what's going to happen in the future next year. And so kind of everything gets preserved in amber or whatever for a season. And like, that's not really good for anyone. But
and that's my biggest fear is that that's going to be what happens. Like, I just have this worry that Gores is going to let it kind of, he's going to punt on it because I don't know, for whatever reason, he's just too busy in his giant ass house in Malibu. And we're just going to get this lame duck year where, you know, his contract's hanging over his head and all the players' head. And then we're going to hit reset a year later than we should have.
Yeah, I could see that. I guess, so my thing is, if you want to fire SVG and start over, the best way to do that is to trade like everyone but Andre Drummond and the guys you've drafted in the last 3 years for you know, picks and cap flexibility. But I don't really know what kind of return you're going to get for Reggie Jackson with 2 more years at like 17 mil a piece on his deal. I don't know what kind of return you're going to get for $20 million worth of John Lure, right? Like,
yeah, I think you got to trade. To me, the first sign of a tank it being put into play would be moving Tobias, and I think Bradley's got to move no matter what at this point, but I think moving Tobias, and I'd say moving Drummond are kind of like the two things that would need to happen. I know Drummond is still young and he's played spectacular this year. I have this inkling that this is his ceiling, and that's, I mean, it's a damn good ceiling. I just worry about him sticking around for kind of a rebuild when he basically came in for a rebuild. And I just don't think he's in this stage of his career where he would want to do that. And I wouldn't want to put him through that. I don't think he deserves that. I think he's an awesome basketball player. He's going to be a great second or third piece on a really good team. I just think we've kind of tried to fit him into this position of being the guy, of being the building block. And it just doesn't, I don't think his personality, and I don't necessarily think his game is best suited for that, the way the game is played right now. If that makes sense.
No, that totally makes sense. And I think you're right in that we have kind of retrofitted Andre as like the building block around which the Pistons are built. But that's because like clearly he's the most talented player on the roster, right?
Right.
And so
you had to make that decision. And I think it was like a very, you know, at the time, a wise decision to make because
he was like 22,
a ton of talent. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. He was super young, ton of talent, and you could see all that potential. So I think they made the right call. I just think, you know, instead of us kind of pushing forward just because that's what we've been doing, I'd rather us kind of recognize the ceiling now and make a move to kind of reset before it's too late.
That gets me into tricky territory, right? Because then you're in like Orlando Dwight Howard territory, right? And like Orlando, it's been 6 years since the Dwight trade, and like that franchise is like not recovered from that. And like,
yeah.
I don't want to be Orlando or Phoenix or, you know, one of these places, anywhere that's not Philadelphia, basically, where tanking,
yeah, extending. Orlando has come out and said they're going to win one championship by 2030. They have like a 12-year, 15-year plan.
Yeah, that's 12 years. That's 15 years from now. Like, I need something. The Pistons have been so bad in like the last 2018. So we'll say like the last 10 years.
I'd say the past decade. I mean,
yeah, I don't have another decade miserable. Of fandom in me. If you're gonna promise me that you're not gonna be good, right? Like, I need.
I mean, I'm enough of a masochist where I have a whole lifetime in me, even if they suck, just because I'm that demented. But now I feel you. It's the next rebuild has to be a little bit quicker.
Yeah. And like, okay, so you look at Orlando, right? And like the way that Orlando screwed up has been that they've consistently like given up on talented players like a little too early. And you say to yourself, like, okay, it's easy not to duplicate that. We just won't give up any of our young guys to try and make the playoffs immediately, which is like fine. But then you end up. If you end up like a Phoenix situation where you're like, okay, we're trading into the first round of this draft. We've got two first round picks in the top 10. Like we're doing this correctly. We're going to be set for like the next 3 years. We got like Alex Lynn. And then like in the draft, you're like, oh crap, this draft isn't like what we needed to be. We end up with Marquise Chris and Dragan Bender. And like all of a sudden you're like, those aren't two guys you can build a foundation upon. And so now you're like even more stuck because you can't.
Yeah.
So
no, I mean, that's kind of the risk of it all, right? Especially for a smaller market team like Orlando, Phoenix or Detroit, you're not afforded the luxury of striking out on a draft pick because you don't have the free
or not even striking out on a draft pick, just like getting a draft pick in the wrong draft, right? Like if you would have gotten a lottery pick in the Anthony Bennett like Oladipo year, like you would, unless you were like ballsy enough to take Nerlens Noel, like you weren't going to end up with like a franchise changing player in the top seven, and like that, like that's the risk you run, right? And but like you don't know that going in ahead of time. And so like it's foolish to say like, okay, this is the year that we're going to get the franchise changing player and then we're going to build everything off of that from there starting now. Like you just don't know, right? And what the Pistons are right now, they are a known quantity. The quantity is like low. It's not a great known quantity. It has potential. We'll see what they look like when Reggie Jackson comes back, if Reggie Jackson comes back healthy in time for like the season to not be over. But like we know, we've at least seen this team fully healthy be a playoff team, right? Or the core of this, the Reggie Jackson, Andre Drummond, Tobias Harris core of this team be a playoff team. And
they are. But do you even bring like, depending on how Reggie is coming back, I mean, looking at the East, do you bring him back? Like, who can we knock off? I think, like, we're looking at, like, a 7th-8th seed. I mean, maybe the Bucks fall, too, but I don't know.
Maybe you hit a thing where, like, maybe Embiid gets hurt and Philadelphia falls off completely, which is, you know, within the realm of possibility, and then you can kind of switch in. But, like, no, yeah, I see what you're saying. But on the other side of that, right, like, where you are right now, you have to out-tank 12 other teams to get into, like, a position where you're getting a draft pick that you enjoy. And so, I don't know. It's just really tough. Like, I'm not quite team tank yet, but, like, the arguments that you guys are making – when they're not being made in bad faith, I'm starting to understand. And like, you know, I've heard some bad faith arguments for the Pistons being terrible. I mean, there are individuals who just they see what Philadelphia has in Joel Embiid, and they see the success they have after they've gotten the 3 number one picks in 5 years or whatever, and they just want that, right? They just want that thing. But
yeah.
Accompanying that was 5 years of like sub 20 win basketball, which I don't know.
And they also just had to get really lucky with like finding other guys like Robert Covington, and even Saric is kind of a find for them. Like it wasn't just those three number ones. It's, you know, they've made savvy pickups and signings and second round
picks. And they whiffed on some draft picks too, right? Like they whiffed on Noel. They whiffed on Okafor. Yeah. They, I don't know. it's they whiffed on those guys, but they also like didn't give those guys an opportunity to develop in like the most positive environment. And so like, who's to say what kind of impact that had like on their development as NBA players? Like, we're not hearing anything out of New Orleans Noel right now, but Jahlil Okafor has scored like 21 and like 8 last night. You know, like maybe he's still an NBA player, but like he was never going to be able to show that in Philadelphia.
Not in that situation.
Yeah.
I hear you. And look, I'll keep it. I'll be very real with you. A lot of my tanking feelings are for purely selfish reasons, because I, as a fan of this team, would rather they admit or commit to this reality that I can see as a fan, instead of living in the kind of false basketball reality of that like competitive bubble being within the organization, which I can totally see happening. I even think like Ben Falk at Cleaning the Glass has written about it. You when you're working for a team, you're convinced your guys are like, you have the team, you're able to compete, you can see it in practice, you can see it in games, and you kind of, it's hard to step outside that bubble at times. And me as a fan, I would just rather them see this ceiling coming, hit reset, and be like, okay, we're kind of washing ourselves clean. Like, we're playing the long game now. I would be able to watch games and enjoy them with much lower expectations than what I'm doing right now, which is like beating my head against a wall, because I, like you said, we've seen this team be a playoff team, and right now they're not living up to the expectations we've kind of set in our head.
That's fair. I mean, yeah. Yeah, no, this has been like a really good discussion, because like this is what we're going to be, unless they start winning, like this is what we're going to be talking about for the next 6 months. So
perfect example. I'm so excited. I can't believe I'm saying this. I'm so excited for this Detroit Tigers season, because there's zero expectations. It's a bunch of youngins. They're going to be so bad. They're going to lose so terribly so often this year. But you know what? Like, it's going to be fun to watch the youth development there and actually see their farm system for once be a little more stacked than usual. And Comerica is going to be completely empty, and then parking will be so much easier. So, you know, selfishly, I love having a team that's kind of committed to like, this is the long game. We're just going to play the youth movement and see what we hit on. And I think it would be in the Pistons' best interest to kind of do a similar move if they're thinking about it sooner than later. I think there are moves. I will say, I think there are moves that Stan can make that would be really interesting if he's going for a win now approach. So I'm not all in on, you know, I'm not Sergeant Fire SVG. I think there's some moves we can make at the deadline that would be splashy and interesting for the near future.
Yeah. I don't know. I saw that clip of Al Avila talking about the guys. He was answering a press conference question about why fans should come to Comerica Park. He was just listing names of dudes I've never heard of, and it's like, oh man, like you guys are gonna be so bad. And like that fills my heart with like dread, right? Because like in my mind, like none of those dudes are ever gonna be anything. And so I just can't handle that. It's like, that's part of the reason why, like, my mind just works differently. Like, I can't do that.
See, I'm much more of a person who's like, you know, be self-aware, understand your kind of your weight class and play to that. Don't think you're bigger than you are. And because that's when you piss fans off. And that's when you like, I think, fail to meet expectations.
That's fair.
Both of yourselves and the expectations other people have for you.
I will say one other thing that doesn't have me super excited about Team Tank is that there's in my mind, like I'm just starting to like delve pretty deeply into this year's draft class a little bit earlier. It's not very deep. There's only like 11 guys.
It falls off pretty significantly after I think like 5 or 6 from what I've been reading. Like if you're not in the top 6, It's not looking pretty.
Yeah, and so to tank and not be able to out tank like the Sacramento and Orlando's and Atlanta's of the world, and you know end up in like the 11th spot and like not be able to get an impact player, like that's even worse, right? Like that's the worst of both scenarios. And so like I don't know. It's reality for them to like accept the fact that like they're probably not going to make the playoffs this year, but I think you have to keep pushing because the alternative is so untenable that you just have to like keep going.
Yeah, I mean I totally, both of our positions are completely valid and I think have a lot of weight in terms of the arguments. It's just I don't know. This is why the NBA is one of the more fascinating sports to be a fan of, I guess.
Yeah. All right, so that was like a solid like 20 minutes, which I'm pretty pleased with. Yeah. So I guess the only other things I really wanted to talk about this week was if Andre Drummond was like actually snubbed for the All-Star game, and if so, like who should have been knocked off. So like, did you think he was a snub or no?
I thought he was a snub. I thought I forget who tweeted it, so I apologize, but someone did like a bar chart with his All-Star year and his stats from his All-Star year and his stats from this year, and like they were pretty even in three, but there were three, I forget the stats off the top of my head, but where he just like significantly is outperforming his All-Star year. So I do think he was a snub. I honestly didn't think Love or Kristaps were like so obvious. I thought Drummond, you could have made a case for him getting in over Kristaps, but just because Kristaps hasn't been playing a ton, he's been like gassed this year, and he's like, I think he's taking like a game off every week. So I thought that was a little surprising that he got in, but it's just,
yeah, I thought he was a snub too. And like the meme answer is like Al Horford shouldn't have been an All-Star because he only averages 13 points.
13 points. Yeah, but like if you watch the Celtics.
Yeah, he's really
like,
important. He is. Yeah. So yeah. For me, the guy that should have been left off was John Wall, because there's like three. There's Kyrie, there's Lowry, and who else?
Lowry's been up and down, though, too.
Lowry's like, been pretty good. And then like even like Dragic has outplayed Wall this year, and like Dragic wasn't even like considered in the All-Star vote. So like John Wall, he took like he had like the knee surgery midway through the season. He had like 3 weeks off. They were the Wizards have been like consistently up and down. Who knows what that means.
Zach Lowe had the ultimate ether of a stat for John Wall. It was like 76% of his time on court is spent walking. It's like highest in the league by
and it's
far.
Like he's such a fast dude that like doesn't make any sense at all.
I've never seen a stat just completely ether someone's hustle so succinctly.
And like his free throw shooting is down, his 3-point shooting is down. Like he just like he wasn't as good as he's been in the past. And so like Andre Drummond should have been in over him. Like that just seemed really apparent to me.
I guess I was just thinking like it's got to be a front court guy that comes out, and I just thought with Kristaps' up and down play this year, I was a little surprised by him. But
I haven't seen every time I've seen Kristaps, like Anthony Tolliver has been like shitting on him, and so like it's hard for me to like know how good he is. Actually, no. I saw the Chicago game where him and the finisher were just dueling it out, and I was like, oh, okay, I get it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, he still balls out, but, like, I'm one of those guys who if, like, you play, I don't even know how many games he's played this year, but I definitely know Drummond's played more than him. So, to me, that matters when you're getting your All-Star selection.
Okay. All right, and the last thing was, so the Nate Duncan and the Dunked On guys did a fake mock trade deadline. And in that trade deadline, they had this really interesting trade proposal that I've been running past people. They fake traded Avery Bradley, Tobias Harris, and a 2019 second round pick for Kevin Love and Derrick Rose. Would you do that trade?
Yes. You know what? I was kind of hesitantly saying yes when you threw this out on Twitter the other day. And the more I sit with it, the more I love it. I think It fills in a lot of the holes the Pistons have right now. I think, look, the reality is people out there who are saying we got to trade Reggie, you just can't. Like, you're not going to get someone better than him back unless you are significantly overpaying in terms of whatever the package is. And I don't think Stan's ready to do that. Also, the market for Reggie's contract right now is just it's got to be zero. So basically, if I'm Stan and Bauer, you got to live with the reality that Reggie is going to be on your roster. So why not take a shot with Rose coming in, hoping that maybe he can kind of take some of the pressure off Ish, who, as we've seen the past 2 weeks, 3 weeks, is just completely in over his head with the extended minutes of being a starter, especially in the fourth quarter. It's just painful to watch. So I like taking a shot on Rose. And then Love, I think, is the most intriguing because of the way his contract lines up with Reggie and Drummond's. You basically build in this window for the next 2-3 years where you have those three as kind of your core group, and then see what happens. I think Love is the ideal front court player for the type of system Stan's been trying to implement or has implemented in Detroit. I think with him on the floor with Drummond, he can kind of space out and provide that stretch four that really Stan hasn't had since being here. I know he kind of wanted Lure to be that guy and it didn't really work out. So I'd be really curious to see what he looks like in the starting unit. And then on the second unit, you get a five who can stretch the floor again, play the DHOs and run a little bit with Ish, and those outlet passes would be awesome with that second unit. So I think, to me, if there's going to be a splashy move, that's the one to make. I think it makes the most sense. It kind of solves your win now. It also sets up this intriguing competitive window where we can see the light at the end of the tunnel in terms of, okay, this isn't working. A bunch of money comes off the books and we hit reset, or we now have this cap space to make moves and stay competitive. So I think it's kind of your best of both worlds option.
Okay. I can see that. I started off like a in favor of this trade, but like the more I thought about it, the more I didn't really like it. I think you're relying a lot on Love to be something that he hasn't been in Cleveland. You're like wondering if like the Minnesota Timberwolves Kevin Love is like still in there, and like maybe he is, maybe he isn't. But like if he's not, you're paying that guy like $27 million for 2 more years, and like you can't really do much with that. Derrick Rose is awful. We saw that today. He literally drove into four defenders on a fast break and got his layup blocked. It made you like weep for what could have been had Tibbs not like run him into the ground. But I don't want that dude anywhere like near the team anyway. And so
I was really trying to spin it for him. Like, to be honest, that was the best Derrick Rose pitch I had in me. Just that little monologue I gave.
I could see it. I guess if it worked, I could see how it would work. But like, I just don't see it working. You know?
No. No, I'm with you on the Rose part. I do think you're right. It the success of that trade hinges a lot on the Kevin Love that shows up. And with his age and his kind of checkered history of health, it's a concern. It's definitely a huge ass gamble. Yeah. But the
other thing is, if you're going to trade both Bradley and Tobias Harris, you need a first round pick. Like you just do. The Cavs have their pick this year. They won't get Stepien ruled because they have the Nets pick. And so like you could, even if you take that pick, which is going to be like in the 20s or whatever, like that's better than like a 2019 second. And that's better than giving up a 2019 second, right? And like there are people out there who like think you can get Avery Bradley for the 2018 Nets pick, and like that's not going to happen. But like if you trade both of those guys, you need at least one first round pick from somewhere.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'd even be happy with a second round pick, honestly.
Well, I'd be happy. Like, so Avery Bradley didn't play tonight. He's still having groin troubles. We saw Yeah. We saw Andre Roberson split his patellar tendon in the game against Oklahoma City. It was a very freak play, very freak accident. And
one of the most wild accidents I've watched in a basketball game.
You know, I feel really bad for him. And like, that's a guy who like already has his money guaranteed, thankfully. But like, that's a young dude who was like, you know, getting legitimate defensive player of the year consideration. And so, you know, I hope he's able to come back to full form. But like, in the meantime, you know, the Thunder now have this gaping hole at two guard, and we have this supplementary two guard that we're not really like needing. And like, and it's really difficult. It's really difficult to construct a trade that like gets Avery Bradley to OKC and like gives Detroit back like relatively equitable value. But like, it's a nice thought experiment, because that's the type of situation where I think Avery Bradley would thrive as like the fourth offensive option, and just like sicking him on like Western point guards in the playoffs. Like, that could work. But like, this, where he's at now, where he's like, he's the primary offensive focus, and he's like shooting all the 18 footers he wants and turning the ball over a bunch. Like, that's not the guy we brought him in to be.
Do you think Presti takes on another expiring though?
Well, I mean, yeah, I could see it. If I think you could get Bradley to stay, definitely. And so I think he'd be more willing to do that.
Almost like a contingency plan for when Paul George becomes a Laker. That's me trolling all three of our OKC listeners.
That's tricky. Yeah. But no, I mean, you could get Avery Bradley to stay, and like, that's an intense backcourt, I think.
So who would you be targeting to get back?
Abrines or Ferguson? One of those two. I like Ferguson. I liked Ferguson pre-draft, but he's really skinny and really young still. He's like, that's a lump of clay. Like, you can do stuff with that guy. And Abrines is just like a knockdown shooter. And so like, you always need that type of guy. You could play him and Luke at the same time and just like torch people. Like, sure, why not? So, but they don't have any. They have very few available first round picks to trade. And so like, you're just. It's like, that's the place where like, you could maybe squeeze a first round pick out of somebody for Avery Bradley if they're like sustaining a major injury, but they don't have any really first round picks to trade, so you can't do that with them. So maybe you try and get another guy like a Josh Eustace or something like that. That doesn't like when you trade Marcus Morris. Yeah, when you trade Marcus Morris for Avery Bradley, you're like not hoping to turn him into Alex Abrines and Josh Eustace like 6 months down the road. But I think something like that could work for both sides.
All right. But see, all those players you mentioned, I feel like it gets closer to that like young prospect, low expectations, tank squad that I was kind of dreaming about earlier, which I'm totally on board with. But
yeah, that's fair. I mean, the tank squad would be based around Luke Kennard, Stanley Johnson, Andre Drummond, if you keep him, and if not, whatever you do with him, and like whatever pick you get this year. And, like, I don't think
I'm here for that. I'm very much here for that squad.
If you can replace Drummond with another center, I don't know if you trade for a center in the Drummond deal, or you take a center with like the top. If you got high enough in the lottery to take one of the big centers, I think that would be cool. But like, I could see that's a rough outline for like success. I could totally see that.
Yeah, no, I'd be very much here for that.
Yeah,
for that squad. So here's a question for you. We talked a little bit about, you know, fire SVG. I've a conversation I've yet to kind of hear is who would you like to see replace SVG?
That's the tricky one, because like, Fizdale is the name on everybody's lips, but the Milwaukee job is going to be open, and like, I would much rather coach Giannis than coach a rebuild, and so you're probably not going to get that guy. Just trying to think of available coaches or like developmental guys. I've seen people mention Jerry Stackhouse, which is like an interesting name.
I was going to say, Aaron on Pistons Twitter has been big on Stackhouse, and I like that idea. I think Stackhouse has been doing some awesome work in the G League. I would I'd be willing to give him his first shot on a rebuild if that's
the Stackhouse Billups coach GM.
I don't know. I couldn't do a Billups GM. I couldn't do that.
Yeah, I said this on Twitter. If like Chauncey Billups like failed as a GM, I'd have to go like wander the wilderness for like 8 months.
It's one of those things that like everyone in Detroit would be so freaking happy about. Like the ticket for the first time ever would do like a week of like just Pistons talk because people would be so pumped for Billups to come back. But like, I just don't think it would be a good idea for like anyone. That's a tough job. If you didn't want to do a Cleveland rebuild, I don't know, man. I hope that doesn't happen. Does David Griffin have a job?
He is not gainfully employed right now. That is a good name.
That's a name I would be looking at if I'm Tommy G out in Malibu.
So, but head coach wise, like I can't really think of any other guys.
I saw some people mention Monty Williams, which I think is an interesting name. Brent Berry showed up on some lists, which would just kind of be hilarious.
I feel like Monty would be a good coach for a really young team that was trying to get better. But like if Monty's trying to run like a playoff team, like I don't want that.
No. I agree. And that's kind of why his name stuck out to me is because if you read about his relationship with Durant in OKC, like he was so instrumental when like Harden, Durant, and Russ were all coming up, like – young team.
And Anthony Davis. Like, he and Anthony Davis also have a really good relationship. Yeah.
So I think if you're going with this kind of young gun squad, I would really like to see his name in the ring.
Okay. Those are some interesting names. I hadn't thought about it as much, but...
Long-term thinking over here.
Yeah, long-term thinking. I like it, Jamie. I like it. All right, so short-term thinking. The Pistons play Cleveland on Tuesday. And then they play Memphis and Miami to finish up the week. How many of those games will they win?
Oh, Memphis and Miami. I'm going to the Miami game. Oh, why am I going to the Miami game? I think they – is it in Memphis?
No. All those games are home.
All those games are home?
Mm-hmm.
God, last time we played Memphis on a Wednesday at home –
oh,
if I'm not mistaken,
I was at that game. Marc Gasol went off.
Oh, the one where Matt Barnes hit the half-court game winner?
Oh, no, the one where Marc Gasol scored like 38 points and like crushed Andre John the stretch and like openly laughed at John Luer, like fouling him from 20
feet. Oh, that was last year. Feet. Yeah, no, I remember that one. I'm talking about 2 years ago when Matt Barnes hit a half-court game winner.
Oh, yeah, that one sucked too.
Yeah, both Wednesdays.
Despite the fact that Memphis is terrible, we shouldn't beat Memphis. We just don't.
No, something about Memphis on a Wednesday just doesn't sit right with me. I think we'll beat Miami.
Wow. Okay. All right.
I don't know. We've played them so close all three times we played this year. Two, three times. I don't know.
At least twice?
Yeah, at least twice. So, and I'm going to be at the game, so I'm like talking myself into that being the one win.
That was Luke Kennard's like first like good. That was the first time that Miami game was like the first time we saw Luke Kennard, and I was like, oh, like he can actually play. Like, okay, this is good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see. Yeah, I don't think we beat Cleveland on Tuesday though, which is, you know, great because it'll be on NBA TV. Players only.
Maybe they'll just like not care. That'd be nice.
I mean, it'll be easy not to care because – wait, you mean Cleveland?
Yeah, Cleveland. Yeah, Cleveland.
Oh, I was going to say it'll be easy for Detroit not to care because it's in Detroit and like Tuesday Tuesday game in Detroit. It'll be nice and empty.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's LeBron. People come to see LeBron.
Yeah, that's true. We always get a huge Cleveland contingency.
Yeah. Nothing like the Toronto contingency, but a pretty sizable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is close to the Toronto contingency or the Golden State contingency. Always blows my mind.
Oh, those are just some bandwagon ass cats.
No, I know, but like there's still a ton of them. Like, it's at least 30-40% of bandwagon people.
All right.
And like, I mean, if you're buying jerseys, like you got to be pretty diehard bandwagon.
True, that's true.
To be buying authentic Golden State jerseys.
Yeah. I mean, Golden State does have some kick-ass jerseys. I'll say that.
They do. I own one, so I'm ripping on myself right now. It's totally fine.
But you're on the Pistons podcast talking Pistons, so you're not a bandwagon ass cat, which is good.
I just like Durant. I'm a big Durant fan.
Really? Not a Steph guy.
No, I am. I am a Steph guy, but I've always been a Durant fan ever since Texas. Man, his game is just one of my favorite to watch.
All right, I can believe that. All right, Jamie, this has actually been a really good conversation. I'm glad we were able to talk out the direction of the franchise a little bit.
Hey, wait, do you hear that?
What is that?
I'm gonna give out some winners. I don't know if you're picking up the prices that you've been selling it at.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I went 2-for-1 last pod. Let that be known. So you're welcome, everybody, for the free advice. Tomorrow, we're going to go with... Ooh. This is a tough one. Let's go with Charlotte +4 in Indiana. We're going to go... Miami Dallas is a pick'em. I'm gonna go Miami, even though it's in Dallas. I'm gonna say Miami comes out with a close one in Dallas, and then Boston +3 in Denver. So Boston, Miami, and Charlotte. Those are your three picks for Monday. Free financial advice.
I would not have put Miami Dallas as a pick'em. I'm like scanning to see if Miami played today, and they didn't. So I got nothing. That
Dallas is just feisty as hell. That's why.
I just watched them get their butts handed to them by Portland in like really? Unspectacular fashion a couple nights ago. But like, yeah, I mean, Carlisle has them. He has them playing hard, but like, the talent level is not always there.
Yeah, I like the ball Miami's been playing. I feel like a pick'em's got to be a mistake.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that. All right, Jamie, where can people get more friendly financial life advice?
Financial life advice and a lot of Pistons nonsense and rants on Twitter at Jamie_Delancey. Catch me there most nights of the week. I'll be commiserating with the rest of you guys over the losses this week.
All right. And you can find me on Twitter at LastChance, at LazChance. I will be, I think, slowly descending into madness, but like very slowly. Like we're gonna.
I'm already there.
It's a control. Like, did you see Dunkirk?
No. I wanted to watch it last night.
Okay, never mind then. I won't.
I ended up watching Happy Death Day.
Ooh, was that good?
Surprisingly good movie. Hmm. Like a self-aware, campy horror flick.
Okay.
I'll give it a strong recommend.
All right. Well, for anyone who's seen Dunkirk, like the end of that movie, The Descent is what I'm talking about, that kind of thing.
Okay. Now I have to watch it.
Yeah, yeah. I
want to know how I feel.
You missed out not seeing it in theaters. Like the score is so intense that like you really need to be in a movie theater to like experience it. But go see it. It was a good movie.
Nolan always killed. Have you heard of this movie Geostorm?
Oh God, yes.
Dude, it looks so bad. I kind of want to see it just because it looks that bad. If anyone out there has seen it, please hit me up on Twitter and give me your reviews because I'm super intrigued.
I saw 2012, and so after that, I swore off Roland Emmerich weather movies. So no more end of the world movies from Roland Emmerich for me.
While we were talking pick'ems, do you have a pick for Oscar Best Picture? For the people?
I do not. Get Out is the best movie I think I saw this year, so I would say that one, but I've only seen like two of the like eight movies that got nominated, so I got nothing.
It's crazy to me that Get Out is the second February release to ever be nominated for Best Picture.
It was that good.
Yeah, Silence of the Lambs being the only other February release that has made it in and eventually won, so... There's your little stat of the day, movie nerds.
A little history lesson. I like it.
Yep. All right, Les.
All right. Thanks, Jamie. Appreciate it. And as for the rest of you guys who had to suffer through the end of that, you will hear us next week.
That was the best part of the pod, people. If you're still listening, you enjoyed the hell out of that.